do you need credits for continuing education, whether that's for a physician, a PA, an NP, a nurse, or just about whatever, then you may want to check out the Intensive Care Academy, Brian and I's other project, which has video-based lessons you can watch at your own pace on a variety of critical care topics. And we think you'll like it, and you can now earn continuing education credit. We're very excited to report our recent accreditation. Go check it out at ICU101.com. It's just about the cheapest continuing education you can buy, I think. And even without that, we think it's pretty good stuff. But now you can get the both. ICU101.com. On to the show. Hey everyone, I'm Brandon Odo.
And I'm Brian Bowling.
And this is Critical Care Scenarios, the podcast where we use clinical cases, narrative storytelling, and expert guests to unpack how critical care is practiced in the real world.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Brian Bowling with you, as always. And as always, my co-host, Brandon Odo.
You.
Well, you might remember a while back, we did a sort of a little mini series on who are the people in your neighborhood, other folks in the ICU that have jobs that maybe we are not super duper familiar with, but who play a really integral role in taking care of our patients. And we had a couple of people on to sort of speak on behalf of your entire profession and tell us everything there is to know about your job in 30 minutes or less. And we thought we'd do that again today with a profession that maybe is less common in the ICU, although I think it's becoming more common, but certainly maybe we're less familiar with, and that's medical musician, or sometimes music therapy is how I've heard it termed. Brandon and I obviously know lots about lots, but we don't know anything about this. So we have a guest with us. Andrew Schulman is a medical musician, and he's been doing this for a long time. He's a professional musician, been around doing that for a long time, but also now does this medical musicianship. Is that fair to say?
Okay.
So we thought we'd have him on and talk about what a medical musician is, what do they do, what the role is in taking care of patients and stuff like that. So welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
All right, Andrew, I'm just going to lead with the obvious question here that probably a lot of people have. What is a medical musician?
Okay, a medical musician, as I define it, and you'll see what I mean by that, is a professional concert-level musician who's had pertinent training in critical care medicine and is a member of the medical team in an ICU.
So they're a musician who has some additional training to play music, to perform music in a certain setting, which is to say, specifically the ICU or in other parts of the hospital?
Yes, specifically the ICU. I should give you a little background here. I am part of a big tent called the field of music and medicine. Music in medicine is ancient. It's been around as far back as history takes us. The primary profession, the core profession in the field of music and medicine is music therapy. Music therapy becomes a profession, and I'm giving all this information from a chapter in the book I wrote, Waking the Spirit, interview I did with Dr. Brian Hunter, who's a music therapist and the official historian of the American Music Therapy Association. So what he told me was that, and this is in a nutshell, the modern term music therapy comes into being in 1950. There was a national convention of a lot of smaller groups who got together, and they formed an organization, and they came up with the title music therapy. The next important development in this field of music and medicine is in 1994, two women in Texas organized something called Music for Healing and Transition. And they train people and have a board certification so that people are trained as what they call certified music practitioners. And both music therapists and music practitioners have a very, very broad area that they cover, which is basically everything that has to do with health. Okay. My story begins in 2009, and it's the opening story, basically. It's the core story of my book, which is I had pancreas surgery in 2009, complications following it, with leading into a medically induced coma. And essentially, I was given no chance to survive that. And it's on, no one could believe I made it to the third day, but I did. And at that point, my lactic acid number was 17. I hadn't been stable in 3 days. I was clearly dying. And my wife had the insight to put earbuds in because she had my iPod. And my ultimate favorite music was played, the St. Matthew Passion of Bach. And in the terms of the SICU director, then Dr. Marvin McMillan, it reversed the metabolic process that was killing me. And it literally saved my life. And you can see it in my chart. I have a copy of my chart. And the doctors and nurses there, this really happened as I'm describing it. When I taken out of the coma, I knew I had to give back and fervently wished and was granted permission to return to that SICU, Beth Israel Hospital, downtown New York. And I thought I would just go a few times to give thanks and play for patients. But literally on the first time I went back, I knew I'd found a new calling in life. So I wound up starting right from the beginning, going in there 3 days a week to play. And I have no formal training whatsoever, but I have the best possible informal training, hands-on, in an ICU where they had saved my life. So all the staff, doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, were all willing to help me develop what I was doing, which is a specialty for critical care, using music in critical care. And I'll just wind this up by saying that in 2018, I founded an organization called the Medical Musician Initiative. And the mission statement there is to train people through workshops and do research, which we've been involved in. And so when I use the term medical musician, and I don't have a board certification, but I have a certification from Dr. Mark Pettis, Associate Dean at University of Massachusetts Medical School, who was Education Director at Berkshire Medical Center, where I played for 4 years. And so the use I have of medical musician is specifically critical care. MMI, my organization, is the only organization that is solely dedicated to critical care, and we go from there. Now, as other people use the term medical music, we'll see what happens. And I hope you don't mind if I add this one more thought. Music therapists, according to how they define it, and I've studied a lot about what music therapists do, music therapists describe themselves as psychotherapists who use music as the primary tool. A medical musician does not do psychotherapy. We have no, that's not what we are. We use the music itself in an ICU. The music is medicine. So an average treatment of music in an ICU on average is 15 to 20 minutes. It can be less. Sometimes it's much more if it's a coma patient or if it's another situation demanding more music. But the reason that music works as medicine is that, as Oliver Sacks once eloquently said, music activates more of the brain than any other stimulus. So in activating the brain that way, the brain produces more endorphins, serotonin, norepinephrine, and this helps the healing process. And one other thing, by activating so much of the brain, it's getting the different parts of the brain to talk to each other and to function better. So you are helping the healing process. That was one of my typically short answers.
So defined in this way, are you the first person of this role? You've kind of invented it, or were people doing this previously?
No, I'm not the first person to do this. People have been playing in ICUs. Music therapists have been in ICUs I know that they start as a profession in 1950. I don't know when the first music therapist did this, but people were doing this before me. What I'm probably the first person to put a focus on is that in choosing the people we train, we're choosing specifically professional musicians. And we focus on several different instruments. I'm a classical guitarist. I play an 8-string guitar with 2 extra low strings, and those low notes really make a difference. I don't have time to explain that right now, but an 8-string guitar, a cello is very, very effective. Small keyboard instruments that can be picked up and carried are very effective. And we like the handheld harp. Those are instruments we focus on. And again, that it's a professional concert-level musician. And the other thing is that what we are doing and focusing on is getting a medical musician to become a member of the team in the ICU, not a separate department. We're part of the team. And As far as I know, and I looked on my good friend Perplexity, the AI search engine, yesterday, MMI is, as far as the search showed, is the first organization that focuses only on critical care.
Okay. So I know how to order an X-ray or consult cardiology. You say you're a member of the ICU team. What patients or situations does medical music have a role?
Okay, everything. So it's going to help everything if the patient is compatible with music. Not everybody likes music. And the percentage of the population, though, that is not musical, or the term is amusia, is very small. It's about 5%. So most people like music. I'll give you a number of examples where it's very, very effective. And in the hospitals where I have worked, where the nurses have gotten to know me, they will come to me to bring me to a bedside in these situations. The first most obvious one is high blood pressure. I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times gone to a bedside where somebody was in the 160s and the medication was not working and nothing was working, and sat there for 20, 25 minutes and literally brought the blood pressure down very significantly. You know, you see 20 minutes later, it's in the 120s. Another instance where it's extremely valuable is ICU delirium, which is, of course, the big, big issue in critical care. And I have two chapters. Well, it's one chapter specifically focusing on ICU delirium in the book. And the prologue actually starts with a patient who's in ICU delirium. And that's an example where in the prologue, where there was somebody completely off the rails. It was a woman in her 70s. And there is my go-to music for that, anything with the brain, is Bach. And there's a reason for that. I talk about that in the book. And in that particular case, that was the fastest ever. The opening phrase of this Bach prelude I played was only 10 seconds long. And she went from way out there, and within 10 seconds, there was a significant change that happened. And then that change continued. Now, I had to stay at that bedside for an hour and 10 minutes to really lock it in. But it did get locked in. Now, you can see the value of that, of course. Another big thing, and I asked you guys if I could bring my guitar. I'm not going to play a piece, but I'm going to demonstrate a little something. One of the best times to play for a patient is when they're sleeping, which sounds counterintuitive. First of all, you don't want to wake them up. And why do I say that's valuable? As we all know, an ICU is a very noisy place. The machine beeps are constant. There are strange voices, which is pretty much constant. So patients do, A, don't get much sleep, and then don't go into deep sleep. And a lot of my experience, of course, comes out of a lot of my technique comes out of my personal experience as a patient. And I remember what my dreams were like. And I knew that you commonly speak to patients who do get any sleep. And if they have dreams, very often they're disturbed dreams. They can be nightmares. They can be really awful. So the first question is, if a patient is sleeping, and the nurses who know me would let me do this because they understood the technique, other nurses might not want me to go to a sleeping patient, and then I explain the technique, they'll give me a shot at it, and this basically always works. What do you hear at the bedside when you sit down there with your guitar? You hear these beeps. So the first thing I do, and I'm going to spend 10, 20 seconds right now doing something that I spend 2 or 3 minutes doing. The first thing I do is this. I mimic the beat. And then after a while, I move it up, back, and then add a note. And you watch the patient very carefully. And I've never woken up a patient doing this. Okay, you do that. And then after about 2 minutes in, you start this. Well, you're playing a lovely, beautiful, lyrical piece of music. And then what you are is the soundtrack to their dream. And you could see on the vital signs monitor the improvement in heart rate and blood pressure while you're doing this. And I have many times later in the day asked the patient, did you sleep? What was it like? It's an absolute plus. So that there's the sleeping situation, and then one of the aspects that's a very important thing in a kind of a sad way, the sadness is that sometimes patients are dying, and when I would walk into the units where I've been for a while where the nurses know me, if a patient is dying, they'll ask me, please go there right away. And why? That's humanity. Because if that person is in their final moments, in their final minutes or an hour or whatever, instead of beeps of machines and strange voices, there's a beautiful melody being played. It's soothing. And I say that the greatest grace a musician can have is to be there in a person's final moments and play some beautiful music for them.
I guess I see it. Now, what would you say to the person who says, well, "Oh yeah, music, we got that. We put on the radio, or you know, we stream music over the TV or something like that." Is what you're doing different than that?
Well, that's a very good question. People often ask me, what's the difference between recorded and live music? And I'm never going to say no to recorded music. Recorded music saved my life. That was my iPod playing for me. What I will say is this. One of the most important things, and Daniel Levitin, the author who wrote This Is Your Brain on Music, he has talked about this as very, very important. It's the quality of the sound, the timbre. If sound can be very beautiful and sound can be very not beautiful, very it can be ugly, okay? You want a tonality that's very, very beautiful. So that's the first thing. I noticed that when I was at Beth Israel, or might have been NYU Langone, they got new beds in that had music. And the quality of the sound was terrible. It was like, it was no value at all as far as I'm concerned and as far as people who know this stuff are concerned. So that is one aspect. If you have somebody who is playing a really high quality guitar or cello right next to that person, the vibration that comes out of the instrument itself and the tone colors, it's really part of what makes it more powerful medicine. Now, the other thing about having a live musician there is that a musician can turn on a dime, a recording can't, meaning if you're playing something that's not if that music is not right for that person, and when you're experienced at this, it's very easy to see, even if a person is, if somebody's in a coma, you can tell when it's not working because you're playing something and the vital signs go south, okay? Well, if it's not working, you can turn on a dime. I once had a very funny moment with a doctor I liked and knew pretty well. I saw him in the afternoon. He said, you know, an hour ago I was in the unit. You didn't see me. I was standing behind you. And you were there for about 2 minutes. And you must have started four different pieces. What's the matter? You couldn't figure out what you wanted to play? And the answer was, actually, I could tell that what I was doing was not working. And by the way, the cutoff is about four pieces in. Because if by the time you get to the fourth piece, if that's not taking, then you segue out. You don't stop abruptly. It's like turning the volume down on a FM radio, and you segue out. It's not working. Music does not work for everybody. A pretty high percentage, but not everybody. So that's what I was doing. And that's what I mean. A musician can turn on a dime.
Okay. So, I mean, what do you play? How do you choose these pieces? And are there certain principles to what's good music to play? Of course, you said some of it depends on the person, but I mean, maybe one person says, oh yeah, music, you know, I like bluegrass and death metal, you know, play me some of that, none of these strings or something. Is it all the same, or?
Well, first of all, the answer to the question of how do you know what to play, there is a definite answer to that. And the answer is you never know what to play. You don't know what to play when you go to that bedside, unless they ask you, you know. And if you go into a situation where a person is doing pretty well, they can ask you. And, you know, now I'm in my fifth month of doing virtual music at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. I live in New York City. I'm doing part of a program. It's therapeutic music in the ICU program. Partly why I'm involved with them is I was the consultant who helped them to get it started. Most of the musicians are students at the Blair School of Music. I'm the only professional musician who's part of this particular program, but I'm having a ball doing it. I'm doing it twice a week. And this is Nashville, Tennessee. So what do you need to know if you're playing in Nashville, Tennessee? You need to know Take Me Home, Country Roads, and by John Denver. Do you know that tune?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you can play Crazy by Willie Nelson, all right. And if you play those two, then they will listen to a Largo by Bach. And there is one particular Bach piece. I'll play just the opening of it because this is, remember I said earlier that there was an ICU delirium patient and it took 10 seconds? Okay. I'm playing just the opening for a reason, then you'll see why. Okay. That's a prelude by Bach. It's a 3-minute piece. I often play that. And by the way, that is at the very top of my list of what I call my penicillin pieces, which are the ones that you know pretty much always work. I often, if I'm playing for non-classical people, which today means most people are not aficionados of classical music. When I finish playing, I ask, who do you think wrote that? Most of the time, people say, did you write that? And my answer is always, I wish. Last week, there was a guy, 30-year-old gentleman, very heavily tattooed, and a really nice guy. And I played it for him, and I said, who do you think wrote that? And he said, Led Zeppelin. He really said Led Zeppelin. And part of my job is not to laugh and, you know, say, you out of your mind, which I didn't do. I just said that. I know what I said to him actually is, that's a good guess, because this music has complexity like Led Zeppelin has complexity. Now, I'll say one more thing about what to play. I am an old pro in New York City music. I'm celebrating my 50th year as a professional musician. And it was just this year, actually, I went into my computer. It took 8 months to, for the very first time in 50 years, make definitive lists of all the A material. And I had a classical list and a popular list. And right now, both of them are, oddly enough, I didn't expect this, but it turns out it's about 240 pieces in each list. That's something like, if you were going to play it all in one stretch, it's about 25 hours of music. And what defines the lists are, number one, it has to be music that I love. I personally love. I'm not going to play something because I think somebody else is going to like it. If I'm not connected to it, I'm not going to play it, because I have to bring it to life. That's the first thing. And I have very broad taste in music. One defining aspect to all of this music is that they all have very well-defined melodies. Because what you want to have happen, and there's a lot of, especially in the pop and in the classical, I have a lot of arrangements of works that originally vocal works. One of the things you really want to have happen with a patient, the same way I want to happen if it's in Carnegie Hall and there's a person in the audience sitting there, is you want people singing in their mind, in their head. You want that to really come alive. And and the other thing is that nothing in that list is derivative music. And derivative is the worst curse word a musician can use in describing the composition of a piece of music. Everything has a strong identity or clarity as a piece. And part of what this is so that every piece of music that you're playing is telling a story. In fact, when I do talks, I title them Medical Musician, a Storyteller in Sound. When I'm going to that bedside, I'm telling a story. It's in tone, it's in music, but it has to be telling a story, because the whole idea is you want that person, especially something you commonly see is you're playing and the person closes their eyes, and that is the only moment an ICU patient can leave the room. They can get the hell out of there for a few minutes. And a very common response to that, which I hear, is, oh yeah, you played that and I saw a beautiful spring day and I was walking in a meadow with flowers. Now, you can see very, very easily that in this description, this is all helping the healing process. You know, I think that's clear and everything. And that's my argument for having a medical musician as the member of a team in an ICU. Now, part of it also is, this thought just came to my mind too. The medical musician has to know their place in the unit. The unit is a hierarchy of doctors, nurses, physician assistant, respiratory therapists, You have to know what your place is. And you are in an interesting place. You're the lowest one on the rung. You're not necessary the same way, well, everybody else is necessary. But oddly enough, there's a bunch of things that you can do that are very high value. For instance, the blood pressure thing I was talking about, or ICU delirium. So it's the best music gig I've ever known for leaving your ego at the door and for doing something that is more valuable than anything you could ever do on the concert stage. One of the chapters in my book is called Better Than a Standing Ovation. If you're at a bedside and somebody's very, very critically ill, and you know that that 20, 30, 40 minutes that you were there helped something turn around, if somebody's oxygenation went from 60 to 80 and then to 90, wound up at 90 because you were playing music that helped them breathe more deeply, and you know you're doing the right thing because the doctors and nurses are your team members and they're telling you, bravo, okay. That feels better than anything I've ever experienced in the civilian part of music. And I love the civilian part of music too. You know, that's great. But medical music is helping your fellow human being that way, which I know that especially I love being involved with critical care because the medical practitioners in critical care are so devoted to medicine and to healing because that's a really tough environment you've chosen to be in. So it's great.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking it through. And I guess in my mind, it seems sort of analogous to, you know, having maybe the physical or maybe especially the occupational therapists work with a patient. And there's always a kind of concrete medical part of that, like improving strength and so on. But there's also this part that comes up a lot in like ICU liberation where just kind of getting people back to doing normal stuff, stuff that's not the strictly medical things like laying motionless in a bed or hearing beeps or having their arms squeezed seems to help establish some normality. And as you said, maybe things like delirium could be reduced and all the stuff that seems to emerge from the soup of medicalization. And music is just so much not medical. It's so much it's like getting a massage or something. It's just like a whole different category of experience. I could certainly see how it might have that effect.
Well, it's both. You know, music is, we don't think of music as a medical modality normally. We think of music as entertainment, spiritual enrichment, art, and so on and so forth. But actually, one of the things I wrote in my book is that I love knowing that my guitar is a musical instrument, but it's also a medical instrument because it is doing medicine for the reasons that I mentioned before, having to do with the with what happens with the brain and with the chemicals that are produced. And, you know, talking about ICU liberation, first of all, I know you from the ICU Liberation Committee at SCCM and the information and dissemination and outreach that we're doing. And I'm in my second term. In my first term, I kept my mouth shut and I just did what I was asked to do. But I made it clear in my second term, and I'm happy to say that I'm having a very good reception, is one of my biggest goals, actually probably my biggest goal as a medical musician, is to bring music into the bundle. Because, you know, there are three places, A, in the assess, prevent, and manage pain. Music absolutely is helpful in managing pain. And then in choice of analgesia and sedation, Well, you know, there are already studies, plenty of studies and everything showing it actually does, music does reduce. If the music is used properly, that's the big thing. And of course, in F and family engagement, that's easy to see. But you could probably also use it even in I left out D, I'm sorry, delirium, you know, where it's so important. So music was integral to medicine and all over the world in every culture until the late 18th century into the 19th century. And the late 18th, 19th, into the 19th century, doctors got much, much more involved in science. And there was music in medicine in Europe and America, even until then. And we got pushed out. We really, really got pushed out. That stays that way until the American Civil War. And then in the American Civil War, they found that if they brought local musicians into the veterans' hospitals, because there was a huge, huge amount of wounded, they noticed that helped. Okay. And then it falls off again. And then in World War II, World War I, it's the same thing. It's local musicians. By the time of World War II, because of certain medical music people around the country running university programs, it becomes more organized that war is over 1945. And as I said, by 1950, then the medical music world coalesces, and you have the outcome of having music therapy as a profession. Now, what really, really helps us, music people, or therapy, you know, a good term to use is therapeutic music, because that includes everybody. What really helps us is the brain scans in the 1980s and 90s, because that's how we know, that's how Oliver Sacks says what he says, that music lights up the whole brain. It doesn't do it all at once. The whole brain is not lit once. Different sections light up, and it depends on the piece and the music and the section of the music, but it basically activates so much. So I think that I put it very bluntly this way, especially because I'm not an academic. I don't have board certification numbers, letters after my name, so I can speak emphatically where other people speak carefully. And my emphatic statement is that if you had in critical care a medical musician or a music therapist or a music practitioner as a member of your team, if that happened in every ICU in the world, I believe very, very strongly that there would be a significant uptake in terms of everything that happens. You have three constituencies in the ICU: the patients, the family and caregivers, family and friends, and the staff. You know, in every ICU I've ever been in, I have found out what favorite tunes are for the staff. And if I see a staff member stressed out, I will be sneaky and stand 10 feet behind them and play their favorite tune. And what that usually does is you see shoulders drop a little bit. They'll turn around and give me a look like, okay, I know what you're doing. But it does help that moment. So that's my big push: medical music, therapeutic music in the ICU.
Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, this is really interesting. So you're in the ICU full-time then?
No. I am in Vanderbilt right now, virtually twice a week. I'm just about to start another hospital, which is Montefiore Nyack in Nyack, New York. We'll be starting that in the next couple of weeks. I'll be doing that 3 days a week, one day on site and 2 days virtually. That'll bring me to 5 days a week, except when I say day, I do 90-minute sessions. So, you know, it's not five full days. It's five sessions a week. And, you know, that's what's coming up for now. You know, we'll see where everything goes. But I'm very excited about Montefiore Nyack. They have a great team there. They found out about me from another podcast, with the one with Sergio Zanotti last November. And we're having discussions about them affiliating with the Medical Musician Initiative. So several times a year, we can do our workshops. We have an introduction to medical music workshop, which we had been doing until the pandemic. And we're restarting those. And we're already talking about studies. By the way, you're in Georgetown, right?
Yes.
So we just finished a study in your liver transplant ICU. I did the music, and that was not live. That was recorded music, which had to be because it was during the pandemic period. And Dr. Jagmeet Kanwal, the neuroscientist, is writing it up right now. But that was I love doing that. You know, it was the dose and duration was, the dose was three 15-minute sets, each set consisting of five pieces, morning, noon, and evening. Each set was about 17 minutes. I always say a good dose is 15 to 20 minutes. And each patient got 2 days of music, and we'll see. Now I am anxiously awaiting the outcome of that.
All right. Well, this has been a really interesting look at this, this area, this profession. I'm sure that some of the listeners have some service that approximates this available. Probably many or most do not. It sounds like you're hoping that will change in the future, but it's definitely kind of gets you thinking about, you know, the sorts of things that affect patients when they're in this situation. And so, you know, I think for a long time we were always used to thinking that more medical stuff helps. Now we're often thinking maybe less medical stuff helps, but now you're sort of suggesting maybe some non-medical stuff might help. I know it is medical in its way, but, you know, different from all the other medical things that we're doing.
Right, right. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's different always flavor. Always looking for a balance, right? It's just looking for a balance. And I believe that we, meaning the community of therapeutic musicians, help to bring a good balance into a room that needs it. You know, I made the decision to do this the day after I came out of a coma, and I didn't know yet about the complications that had happened. I didn't know I'd been clinically dead twice. And I didn't know that I'd been in a coma for 7 days when I woke up. I just thought I'd had my surgery the day before. And my wife walked in at 8 a.m. and explained everything to me. And it was the most powerful moment of my life, I'm pretty sure will always be, in that moment of thinking about things. And I knew that I had to give back because I'd been given the greatest gift you can be given, a second chance at life, literally a second chance at life. I remember looking at a box of 100 latex surgical gloves, and I thought, well, I had about enough money I could buy two of those boxes and donate it to the hospital. So I thought, well, that's not really going to cut it. And then I thought of my guitar. And I saw an old woman across the hallway at bed 12, and she looked so destitute, and she was so alone. And then I started hearing all these moans and groans from around me, and I turned to my wife and I said, with what happened to me, God, you can't thank God enough or your doctors and nurses or your loved ones. You have to give something to give thanks. And the only thing I had to give was my guitar and music. That's how it all began. And now, you know, do I think I'm the Johnny Appleseed of medical music? If in some part of me can be part of this international community of people who are in the music and medicine field, who are all working very hard to bring music back as a core integral part of medicine. Well, I'm very grateful to have that chance.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and shedding some light on all this. We'll let you go now, and we'll talk to the rest of you guys next time.